Let us be turning to the book of Titus together. Titus. If there is one thing this world needs, besides the gospel of Jesus Christ, it is faithful Christian men and women being the examples to everybody else. The church would be so much stronger if everyone behaved the way that a faithful Christian should, and the world would be a better place because they would see the light of Christ within us by the way that we live our lives. I quickly want to go over the book of Titus together by way of introducing what this book looks like from a bird's eye view up until our point of discussion this morning. Just so you know, we're talking about Christian men specifically this morning, and then Christian women this evening, because that's how Titus breaks down this particular recommendation or commandment to fellow Christians, as Paul is talking to Titus about the example that the older and the younger men should be, and then the older and younger women should be as well, and gives us an ideal to shoot for. But when you stand back from the text and you look at what we see up until chapter 2, we see a basic introduction that's very common from Paul in chapter 1, verses 1, 2, 3, and 4. You see a commandment or a charge of what to look for in appointing an eldership in chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. The reason why it's so important that we have faithful and qualified elders is because of the false teaching that was going on in the first century and still is around today. That's in chapter 1, verses 10 through 16. And then on 16, there is a pivot point into what we call chapter 2, verse 1. And then the charge is made by giving us a compare and contrast between the behavior of these false teachers versus the behavior of faithful Christians. And thus, we have a charge for Christian men and a charge for Christian women to examine themselves and see how they behave themselves and their behavior, and then compare that to those false teachers. If we look over into Titus chapter 1, verses 16, and then chapter 2, verse 1, it reads this way. They, talking about those false teachers from the previous context, they profess to know God, but in works they deny him, being abominable, disobedient, and disqualified for every good work. That's obviously not where we want to be, right? That's the exact opposite of where we hope to find ourselves in light of God's judgment. And then that pivot happens in chapter 2, verse 1. But as for you, in contrast to the previous statement, speak those things which are proper for sound doctrine. And that's how he begins the encouragement for Christian men and women to examine their behavior and to charge them to make sure they're living in the correct way. And so as we go through this text today in chapter 2, verses 1 through 10 specifically, we're going to see that the contrast between the behavior of the false teachers and the behavior of the faithful Christians in the church that Titus was serving need to be complete polar opposites. There shouldn't be any blurred lines, shouldn't be any similarities. It should be a stark contrast between those that are unapproved and those that are approved of God. Now, this connection between sound doctrine and proper behavior is not just mentioned here in Titus. It's also mentioned all the way back in the Sermon on the Mount. So let's look back in Matthew chapter 7 together, and I want to kind of give you a passage that helps enlighten why this particular theme is so significant. So in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15, Jesus said this at the very beginning of his ministry, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves." So there's that warning all the way in the beginning of the ministry of Christ. "And you will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire, and therefore, by their fruits, you will know them." So Jesus here is talking in a language, in an illustration that we can understand. If I want to go gather some strawberries to eat, where am I going to go? A blackberry bush? No, it's nonsense, right? Of course not. If I want strawberries, I got to figure out where there is a patch of strawberries growing. So I got to go to the strawberry patch, right? That we understand that kind of language. If I'm looking at someone's life and I see that it is full of sin and corruption and disobedience to God's will, I'm not going to look at that person's lifestyle and say, that person must be a faithful child of God. Those two things cannot coexist. And so the warning that sound doctrine equals proper behavior, and also proper behavior equals sound doctrine, these two themes go hand in hand. That's why it's so significant for us to have discernment, to be able to tell if we're living correctly or not, if those around us are living correctly or not, to help them along the path towards heaven. And so we have that as a centralized theme of Titus, really chapter 1 and the beginning of chapter 2. And we mention all of that to kind of set the stage for what we're examining this morning and what we're talking about this evening. The charge for Christian men and Christian women to examine their own lives and to make sure that they're emulating exactly what Christ would have them to do. So as we move forward, we look into the two particular categories that's mentioned for us in this particular text of Titus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. We see that talking specifically about men, for sake of convenience of how the text is broken down, we have two categories of men. So if you're looking to put yourself into a box today, make sure that you fit in one of these boxes if you are indeed male. We have older men and we have younger men. And you have to pick which one you want to be before we launch into an investigation, right? So to kind of give you a background of exactly what this older man versus younger man looks like when it comes to the original language, the word for older here is a word that's similar to what we have in the English as Presbyterian. It's the Greek word presbyteros, and it's used in a form here to indicate someone who is aged. So this is not an elder man, someone who is qualified in the office of an elder specifically, but it's just someone who is older. Now, we have in contrast to that what we call the younger men here, and this word young literally looks like the word new. So you have new men and then you have old men. It's kind of the idea of how it looks in the original. And there are two different ways to look at this, and this is up to you on what you think the correct way to apply this situation to your own life is. For Titus to be instructed by Paul through inspiration, for these men to examine themselves, whatever box or category they put themselves in, either older or younger, really depends on how you're examining them. Do you examine these men based on just their age alone, meaning someone is older over a certain age and someone is younger under a certain age? Or are we talking about someone who, as a Christian, in their faith, in their walk as a follower of Jesus Christ, there's someone who is older or more mature, or there's someone who is newer or a newer convert? Either way could apply to the application that we see here in the text. And as we go through, you'll have to decide which one you think is more accurate. They both fit, but I'm of the opinion that maybe we're talking about not just age, as we've often heard it, but maybe we're talking about a level of spiritual maturity as well on how we categorize our men here in this particular situation. So we turn in our Bibles then to Titus chapter 2. I'll read verse 1 for us once again. But as for you, here's the pivot, the contrast, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. And then he goes into what qualifies as sound doctrine or teaching. That, verse 2, the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. And likewise, verse 6, exhort the young men to be sober-minded, in all things showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, and doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. And so as we see what actually befits that which is sound doctrine or teaching, we see that connection once again between proper behavior and sound doctrine. If your doctrine's right, your life's got to be right. If your life is right, your doctrine's got to be right. So those two things cannot be separated here in this particular context when it comes to how we examine ourselves and examine those that are around us. And so if we back up here into the text and we just look at the men for sake of convenience of making it a package for us to examine ourselves, we see that the older men are told to have these qualities or these characteristics. First one is sober. Second one is reverent. And another way to describe that in the English, according to the ESV, is the word dignified. We have the word temperate in the New King James, and we have the idea of someone who is in control of themselves or self-controlled in the ESV. And then fourth, we kind of have a blanket statement. They have to be sound. They have to be complete. They have to be truthful in regards to these three things: their faith, their love, and their patience or steadfastness. Those two words are kind of synonymous here in this particular context. And so we look at this and we see what Titus is being told by Paul that he has to see or examine or encourage or charge these Christian men of this congregation to obtain or to have as a character, it's very easy stuff to just say. We look at the description of what a older Christian man should look like, and we say, well, of course. Who is questioning that? Who has any problem with older Christian mature men being described in this particular way? And that's the entire point of this, is there were apparently older Christian men who did not have this as a part of their character, and they had the exact opposite, probably, in fact, and they were those that were labeled as the false teachers from the previous context in chapter 1, verses 10 through 16. And so, if Titus is being commanded to go and establish an eldership at every congregation where he's sent in Crete, and he's told, here is what qualifies a man to be an elder or to be a shepherd over the flock, the reason why it's so important is because there are people that are living the wrong way and they're teaching the wrong thing. In contrast to that, here is what a faithful, sound, older man looks like. That is where we find ourselves in chapter 2. All right, so that's a big picture for you. That's the full context as far as I can give it to you. And as we apply that to our own situations, to the older Christian men, and you know who you are, we look at ourselves in this light and we say, do these characteristics apply to us? It might be helpful to do a word study of each one of these particular phrases and how it's used and how it's used elsewhere. So what we're going to do is go through these somewhat in a slow way, examine the ones that may give us some trouble. Because sometimes we look at this and the original language is exactly what it looks like in the English, and sometimes it's not. It's close, and in some ways it is, but in other ways it may have a better rendition in some other passages. So we jump into our older men situation here, looking at their characteristics. The very first thing mentioned is sobriety. And immediately in our context and in our culture, we equate sobriety in contrast to drunkenness. If you're sober, you're not drunk. If you're drunk, you're not sober. We think immediately of drugs and alcohol. And while that does fit this context, the sobriety in this particular passage, that word for it is used elsewhere in a different way. A better English word or definition for the original Greek word of that word sober is the word temperate. And if we use the word temperate outside of the idea of just alcohol, it gives you a picture of a man who is balanced. He is not given to excess, not only just in drugs and alcohol, obviously, but way beyond that, you can be temperate in a lot of things in your life. And there's a lot of application for this. I'm sure you know of men in your life who may not have a problem with drugs, may not be a problem with alcohol whatsoever, but they have a problem with something else that they give into when it comes to their excess. And so if we're looking for a church that's full of people that have sound doctrine and proper behavior, when you look at the older men, you should see a man who has his life in a proper biblical balance. Not just alcohol, not just medication or drugs, but when it comes to everything in their life, there is a temperate balance within them. And so, as we look forward, we have the idea of reverent. This is the idea of someone who is dignified. I know that there are some men who behave in a very dignified way. I know a few older gentlemen who I've never seen out of a three-piece suit. I've heard legends of them wearing three-piece suits and ties while mowing their grass. That's not a joke. I've actually heard that there was a preacher that I look up to, that I respect, who's now passed on, who his neighbors laughed at him because he actually wore a suit to cut his grass. That was kind of the culture in which he lived in 1958, and that's what he wanted to be, and he was someone that when you thought of him, you thought of someone who was dignified. I'm not saying we all have to dress in suits to go cut our grass. What I'm saying is a proper overall opinion of someone when they look at an older, mature man should be someone that has dignity about their lifestyle. This third word that we find here in the English is temperate, and that's, of course, very similar to what we talked about before. But the original word here is used later in reference to the young man and being sober-minded. That's the very first encouragement. It's the exact same word, a different ending on that Greek term, but the same root is there. And a more literal way to say it in the English would be literally, he is someone of a sound mind, meaning he's all there. He's all there. His marbles are still present within his head, right? So if you think about an aged man, a mature man, who's living the correct way, the overall thought about his personality is he's someone who is balanced in his life, not given to excess in any area. He's someone that's dignified. He has an aura or an air of dignity about him, if you will, to use our figure of speech. He's someone that's sound mind. He's someone that has a good head and the shoulders. He makes good decisions. He's someone that you can rely on for good judgment. And he is sound. He is truthful in these last three areas. In his faith, he's a good Christian man, first and foremost. Love. He is a display of how a man loves. The same way, by the way, this love is agape. The same kind of love that God had for all of us to send his son to die on the cross. So he is an example of faith, of love. And finally, I love how this is stated here in the English. Patience. I know a lot of older guys who are mature, good Christian men, and they are 99% of the time just the person that I would turn to when it comes to any problems that I have in my life. They are good judgment, good wise men, and then you get in a car with them, and then you get stuck in traffic. We all have our weaknesses, and traffic for Charleston must be the Achilles heel. This is the thorn in the flesh. Who in the world designed a city with only one road? You got 17, you got 526. Doesn't make any sense. We've all got to go somewhere. It's down one of those two roads. So when I think of patience in the English, I think of someone who's impatient, who has long suffering and so on. But the original word here for the idea of patience more has the feeling of being steadfast. They're reliable. Their word is true. When they say they will do something, they follow through. Their word is their bond and so on when it comes to thinking about a good, faithful, mature Christian man. That is what a good, faithful, mature Christian man looks like if you want to examine his character. Again, In this context, there were older men who were not behaving this way, and Titus was told, you need to make sure you've got shepherds watching the flock for men that don't live this particular kind of lifestyle. And so it's a warning, but also an encouragement for us to examine ourselves as time goes on. So not only do we have this first category of older men or mature men or elder mans, talked about here literally in the first context, you also have younger men. So as we move forward, we look into verse 6. Likewise, or in the same way, the same manner, exhort or encourage the young men. Again, this is a new man, literally. So either a new convert, new Christian, or someone who in their age is new, relatively. Exhort the young men to be sober-minded. Again, that's literally be of a sound mind. Normally, when you talk to a young man, you can tell pretty quickly their maturity level. And you can also tell if they've got a good head on their shoulders or not. I'm not going to tell you where people thought I was when I was considered a younger man, but I will tell you that examining ourselves is very, very helpful when it comes to examining if our mind is sound. So again, sober-minded. Verse 7. In all things. Whenever you see the phrase all in Scripture, that word all qualified by something else that we're to examine, pay attention to that. Because what it means is there is an overarching impression that in regards to many things, but especially all things, we need to pay attention. So again, verse 7, in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern. That word pattern is the original Greek word that has the idea of a die or a press or a mold or a stamp. And so in everything, you want to be the pattern. You want to set the stage. You want to set the mold for good works. Verse 7, in doctrine, in integrity, in reverence, in incorruptibility. That is an extreme list. To show yourself in everything a good example to follow, but especially in these major things. The one that's difficult, I would imagine, or more difficult at least than the others, is verse 8. Especially if we're talking about young men, meaning in their age, not their maturity level. Verse 8. Sound or proper speech that cannot be condemned. You would not have liked to have a conversation with me before I gained a Melissa filter. If you don't know what a Melissa filter is, my wife's name is Melissa. And my Melissa filter is the Allen or the nudge in the shoulder whenever I say something really, really stupid. I used to get that a whole lot. I used to hear Allen in my dreams because she would correct me so often. After the course of a couple of years, and now well past a decade, I hear her voice in my head most of the time when talking to someone else. I'm thinking, if I said what I'm thinking about saying, how would Melissa react? I'm not saying that's a good thing for you to do, that you need that, but I need that. Because, verse 8, sound or proper speech that can't be condemned, I used to say a lot more dumb stuff than I say now. If you've heard me teach a Bible class, I say dumb stuff all the time, hopefully to keep your attention, right? And so the charge here for young Christian men is make sure that you're mindful what you say, and they need that encouragement, let me tell you. But why? Not just because it can be sometimes offensive, you can say something the wrong way and hurt someone's feelings, but more important than that, keeping in mind that you, in all things, should be a good example, especially in these things, and especially what you say, in the first century context, verse 8, that, or because, one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Paul puts it in this framework. Young men, consider yourself. Make sure you are of a sound mind, making good decisions. You have good judgment. Also, make sure you recognize that you need to be a good example in everything, but especially these very, very important things. And especially, once again, what you say, because people are trying to find fault with you. They're looking for an excuse. They're looking for a reason to minimize or condemn Christianity because of what you say. In this context, why is that important? Because you've got older men who are mature, who are not living the right lifestyle, not teaching the truth, and they are influencing the younger men to follow in their footsteps. If the older men are teaching error, the young men are learning from the older men what they are to teach and what they are to do, and people are trying to pick Christianity apart. Therefore, older men, make sure you live the right way and therefore teach the right things. Young men, make sure you're aware that you are an example and people are watching what you do and what you say. For our application, obviously it's a bit more simplistic. We want to be faithful Christians. We want to have the right characteristics. We want to bear the proper fruit of a faithful Christian. And for the men of the congregation, this is our charge. If we're young, if we're old, we have qualifications, if you will, on things that should describe our character. And while we're human and we're not perfect, we all need a goal to shoot for, to strive forward, a finish line to try and reach to become better as time goes on. Lord willing, this evening we'll go over the charge for Christian women. And while the characteristics are different, they are just as balanced and helpful to give us a target to shoot for, to have a faithful, sound congregation here in this location. So I'd like to encourage you, if you're able to come back this evening, to be a part of that discussion. If you're not able, or you'll be traveling, this will be uploaded online as normal on our website that you can follow along if you so desire. This evening, the most important thing, or this morning, the most important thing that we're to learn from all of this is there is such a thing as a good Christian man, and we should strive towards that goal. But first, we have to be Christians. We have to be followers of Jesus Christ, the sinless Son of God who came to earth, took up a body, lived a sinless life, and then gave his life for our sins on the cross of Calvary. And if we're simply obedient to his commandments and follow him the rest of our days, we have the hope of glory in heaven with him forever. If anyone has a need to respond to the invitation of Jesus Christ, something in your life is not right, you've not been hitting the mark when it comes to who you need to be, and you want to make a course correction, you want to be a man and change before it's too late, and address your needs before time goes too far on, please come forward now. Stand and we sing.